This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
In 1995, at a conference about the human abduction syndrome, one of the participants was a man named Jim Sparks, born Jim Sparacino to his Italian parents on November 15, 1954. Unlike many abductees who experience loss of consciousness and missing time, Jim's interactions with what he calls aliens have been mostly conscious. Even back in 1995, Jim Sparks made a clear distinction between what he described as small, gray, drone worker types in contrast to taller, true aliens or supervisors. Jim explained that when he was 34 years old in 1988, he was happily married and had thriving real estate work in both Texas and North Carolina. Then suddenly, beings from other worlds entered his life and he thought he was losing his mind. Jim Sparks had interactions with different types. One category was the gray-skinned, large dark eyes that apparently come in many varieties, including small androids that do work for those taller, independently intelligent controllers. Jim also had a conscious face-to-face encounter with several tall, reptilian-skinned humanoids. Jim says those reptilians warned that the Earth's environment is facing a crisis and that the planet must be saved, whether humans survive or not. From 1988 into the 1990s, Jim was schooled by the grays in front of computers and three-dimensional projections. Jim was forced to learn the alien symbols and numbers. Eventually, Jim says that he was contacted by alleged U.S. government intelligence operatives who wanted to know about the alien symbols and numbers that he was being taught. Jim has always stressed that when people see aerial craft jump from one side of the sky to the other, or see entities that appear translucent and walk through solid walls, or feel a weight go down on their bed but cannot see what's making the weight, it's all advanced alien technologies. Since Jim Sparks was taken from his home by a non-human beam technology over several years and educated in front of alien computer screens to learn alien symbols and numbers, I asked him to study the Stephenville, Texas symbols videotaped by David Carone on January 19, 2008, to see if Jim could see any meaning in the symbols. I talked with him about his impressions of the projected three-dimensional and colorful symbols by the aerial disc near the Stephenville, Texas Municipal Airport.
What stands out the most is the fact that the symbols flashed. Not so much did I recognize them specifically as the symbols that I'm familiar with. Not necessarily, in some cases, sort of similar, but the fact that the symbols flashed is similar to how communication takes place in the galactic neighborhood, so to speak. The technology exists to flash a symbol before a human being, and at the time, you may get the whole picture, understand exactly what it means. Even if it's 40 or 50 or 60 pages of text, it could even be as much as an entire movie. Or a symbol will be flashed, presented before you that way, and you'll absorb the message, but you will begin to understand it at a later time. So I think what stood out the most was the fact that the symbols flashed that way. When I saw the video, I didn't get the meaning at that moment, so I believe that the meaning of the symbol will come later.
The rapidity of the change of the symbols is something that you recognize from your own experience?
Yeah, the best way for me to describe something like that would be, if I just mentioned a movie to you, if I were just to say, for example, Gone with the Wind, most people have seen that movie, or if I were to say Independence Day, your mind is capable of seeing that entire movie in a flash, the emotions behind it, what the movie was about, how it began, and how it ended. Because you sat through an hour or two of watching it in a sort of a slow speed, you were receiving the data, but the mind is capable of retaining that data in a flash. Non-human intelligent beings in the so-called galactic neighborhood communicate that way. They can flash symbols, and you can get the full meaning of a two-hour movie or the full meaning of whatever message they were trying to get across. So that's something that I saw that's very similar in these symbols. What I find fascinating is the way the symbols are presented. I call it flashed. You called it sequence, I believe.
Well, flashing in a sequence.
Yeah, flashing in a sequence, right. And I know that's a method of getting information from ET to ET or from ET to human. It's a fast way of getting a lot of data in a short time and retaining it. So I definitely see that there, too.
We're speaking in February 2008. From all of your personal experiences with the non-human intelligence that you interacted with, do you have any clearer sense right now of what might unfold this year into the near future?
For myself personally and for many millions of other abductees, we were informed the condition of the environment. We were informed that there's something that we need to do, and we need to do it sooner than later so we don't destroy ourselves. That's the route we've been going. The fact is that these technologies are not just in ET hands, but they're in the hands of human beings. But of course, black budget and secret, above top secret, and the nature of that, these things aren't getting out to the public. But what I do know is some of the things in their possession is non-polluting, free energy. There's a technology that is so phenomenal that will draw matter out of water, meaning pollutants. It can clean the sea pretty quick, all the Earth seas. There's technology that'll draw the trash and garbage and poisons that we put in the atmosphere. There's technologies that exist that can regenerate the planet's wildlife, meaning in like the rainforest and stuff, vegetation, growth. There's a growing majority in these black ops or these organizations that want to see these technologies come out to make a difference, that would like to see these things come out so the human species can evolve for the first time in its history. These things exist. So according to the sources, they want to see an amnesty bill or an avenue created where they voluntarily can come out, not by force and not be forced to disclose everything that they have, but if a single person or if a group chooses to come forward with these technologies and the truth about extraterrestrial life, and they can't be prosecuted. They're concerned about their own hides, quite frankly. It's a big reason why a lot of this stuff doesn't come out. And let's face it, we all know that in the last 50 or 60 years, people have been discredited for having this knowledge and trying to get it forward. People have been maimed, and in some cases, people have been killed. Those are crimes against humanity. And when you come forward with these kind of technologies and the truth about extraterrestrials, in that same bag, you're going to have to come out with what we did to keep this stuff secret, what we did for national security, and as they view it on a global basis. And so if there's 100% amnesty, meaning they can't be charged with any of these crimes, I think we can really, really see a change on the face of the planet beyond our wildest dreams.
But why would the non-humans have allowed our government and other governments to suppress advanced technologies in the first place that would have solved our energy and environmental problems?
Well, the way I see it, things have happened in stages, meaning that we all know that from the 40s to the 50s, there were what they called them flying saucers in those days. There were flying discs in the air. Good, clear, black and white photos were taken that really can't be denied. Also in that day, we had absolutely nothing even close to that kind of a technology. We were paranoid. Government was paranoid. I think the biggest problem in those early years was the fact that if they were benign, well, that's all well and good, but what if they were doing things we didn't like? There was nothing we could do about it. We had to catch up with that technology by shooting them down, by trying to make contact, and everything under the sun. Of course, most of us were smart enough to know that these things were certainly there. We knew even then these things were real. Of course, we were being told, you know, one lie after the next. And I think in those early years, that was to try to catch up with the technology, to have something to respond back if it was something they didn't like. So they couldn't come out to the public and say, hey, these things exist. We don't know what they are or where they're coming from, and there's nothing we can do about it. So that was the take they took, as everybody knows. And as the years went on, some of these things crashed. I think we all know the story about Colonel Corso. Some of these high technologies got in the hand of industry. We formed different agencies that back engineer crash disks. In some cases, they've even recovered living beings. And as time has gone on here, I believe that contact was actually made and agreements were actually made to work side by side in certain areas in secret also. Now, according to the information that I have, we were warned even 50 years ago that we were on a path to create an environment that a human being could not exist in anymore. Even if the ET at that time or even at this time isn't so much concerned about us, they're concerned about this host planet. They don't want to see an environment that's nuked out, biologically wiped out, or create an atmosphere that no one can breathe anymore. Obviously, there are agencies, almost any abductee can tell you, they've seen paramilitary or military personnel working side by side with ET. But I get a sense, it doesn't take much of a rocket scientist in my eyes, to see that environmentally, in particular, if we don't do something, we're going to be in trouble here within the next 10 years easily. I mean, serious trouble.
When you were in the craft with the non-humans and they were showing you symbols and the screens, did you ever see a three-dimensional image of the Earth with the telepathic communication? This is what your Earth is going to look like at a specific year?
What I would see, okay, in the early years of my experiences, there's no doubt that the technology exists to manipulate time. To what degree? Well, that's hard to say. I can tell you of a case that I had an abduction scenario where the process took approximately 2 hours. And when I was brought back, I thought it was by accident, but I think it was to learn something. I was brought back 2 to 3 minutes before I left. That was phenomenal. So I know time can be manipulated. In those early years, in almost every experience other than emotional experiments or extracting semen and everything that they did in those days, I would get a session of seeing different scenes from different time periods from around the globe. Some of the scenes looked like they were way in the distant future. Some of them looked like they were pretty much present. Some were in the past. They were never in order, and they were a bit disorienting, where I couldn't put a finger on what time period it was or what the meaning was. What I'm realizing over time is, it's like any other human being. If you give them a peek at the future, you know, they may start doing things to plan at what they've seen, and it could be totally out of line with what a global agenda may be. From personal experience, I saw what I perceived to be two potential futures, and it was divided like a highway as it was presented in hologram form. To the left was a dark, dreary future that was police state in nature. Very, very, very few of us survived it. The skies were a dark gray, almost black, but a dark gray. Light was emanating from nowhere, yet everywhere, so it was almost as if the planet was glowing, so to speak, from the sun not being able to filter light through like it used to. The soil, the ground, had huge, thick coatings on it, almost as if there were a black, damp, ash-like looking material. And the buildings and the structures and the things that I saw were not destroyed, but yet coated with this ash. You could see people in this. They did not look uncomfortable, meaning that the few people that I did see in this scene looked like they could breathe the atmosphere, but it seemed to be a very dreary, dreary place. And something that stuck out that I saw, which kind of bothered me, was there was a community. It sort of looked like a small downtown area, anywhere America, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And in that area was a person who was in uniform, and it's a uniform I didn't recognize, almost like a Gestapo checkpoint person, meaning that the very few people that survived it that day, when they came into the community, they were checked. So it did not look good. Now, on the bright side, on the right side of this, like I said, it looked like a divided highway, was the complete opposite, meaning that we had evolved. There was a longevity beyond the point of passing away. It was bright. It was clear. It was clean. And what was kind of scary to me, even though it was positive, was the fact that it looked like the human species had evolved to the point where they can span the cosmos. And so there wasn't as many earthbound individuals from what I could see, meaning that we can go anywhere. We finally evolved. So it was two things. The line in the middle that divided these two scenes represented, in my understanding, how close we are to go one way or the other, and what a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous day that we live in. Mm-hmm. And almost the flip of a coin can make a difference which way we go. clearly. If we go to the left, which was the dark and dreary, it's not a good thing. If we go the other direction, we can actually join the galactic neighborhood and for the first time the human species evolved.
In February 2008, Jim, how old are you right now?
I'm 53.
In your remaining lifetime, have you been shown in any way that you will live to see the government of the United States and other governments tell the truth about the existence of other extraterrestrial life forms?
I'm confident that that will be revealed. I'm confident in my lifetime. Again, the only scary aspect of it is, will we take the positive route and evolve, or by merely a flip of a coin, take the negative route and not evolve? The odds are that we do not, but I think that we can break them this time, as I mentioned, because of these technologies are in the hands of human beings. And, you know, not all these black op people are bad. I'm not saying they're great. I'm not saying what they're doing is right by a long shot. I think it's sad that the government rules people and people don't use the government as a tool like it's supposed to be.
Why don't the extraterrestrials force the governments of this planet to tell the truth?
They don't operate that way. This is a very hard thing for the human species to swallow. We, as a species, tend to want to rely on another source to get us out of jams or for us to go forward. We're all guilty of that. For example, we look to the government to pull us out. We look to God to pull us out. By looking inward and doing these things ourselves, not have ET overpower the government, not have ET lead the way, because it won't have any meaning, it won't have any depth. ET is saying you need to get, as a species, you have to set a certain fundamental foundation. And that's the only way we can then intervene effectively. And these are things that we need to do first. And according to them, they have commandeered, so to speak. They have force-played scenarios in the last several million years, and it didn't work. I have come to believe that when the human species evolves, it's not really going to be so concerned about non-human intelligent life. Yes, I think we will rub shoulders with them, not only here on this planet, in outer space, and in other dimensions, because in the galactic neighborhood, they're not warring. In the galactic neighborhood, technologies are so advanced that you always know if you have an enemy, you always know what they're thinking. It's a world out there that has differences, but it's a world out there that they don't destroy each other over the differences because the cosmos is pretty big.
Recently, one of my EarthFiles.com viewers sent me a 1988 case from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in which a man named Granchi copied symbols on a piece of paper after seeing black-colored symbols projected from a hovering UFO. I placed the 1988 Rio de Janeiro symbols in my February 20th viewer comments report at Earth Files and compared them to the December 13th, 1952 symbols found by George Adamski on one of his photographic plates allegedly taken of disc and cigar-shaped craft that Adamski said were piloted by blonde-haired humanoid extraterrestrials that contacted him at his Mount Palomar, California home. I also compared both of these sets of symbols with very similar symbols carved in megalithic stone discovered by French archaeologist Professor Marcel Aumé in 1963 when he explored the northern Amazon River basin of Brazil. Those carved megalithic stones were estimated by Professor Aumé to be 10,000 years old. You can see a symbol-by-symbol comparison between the stone symbols and the Adamski symbols in my February 20th Earth Files report, and you can compare those with the Stephenville, Texas symbols, which are also in the report. Further, I want to share another email I received recently from an engineer. Quote, I use three-dimensional CAD software to design kitchen and bath layouts for my business in Chicago. What strikes me about the uniqueness of the Texas light symbols is that they are three-dimensional. That is, they occupy space rather than 2D surfaces, as do the Brazilian and Adamski symbols. The three-dimensional symbols are going to look different depending upon who is looking at them from what direction. The two-dimensional symbols can only project one meaning because they are on a flat surface. If someone created the light symbols in three-dimensional CAD, you would be able to reorient them by changing the perspective view and evaluate how their projection and possible meaning changed. An interesting question is, were the people who recorded the images the ones who were intended to perceive them, or did the symbols have greater meaning if they were viewed from a different observation point? And if so, who, if anyone, were the symbols meant for? Unquote.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.